Welcome to Always Authors, the literary podcast that presents two authors in candid conversation. On this episode, we're excited to bring you Rachel Linden, best-selling author of five novels, including her most recent novel, Recipe for a Charmed Life, released in January of 2024. Rachel is in conversation with New York Times best-selling author Christy Woodson Harvey. Christy's novels include The Summer of Songbirds and the Peachtree Bluff series. Her latest book, A Happier Life, is expected to be released in June. Listen in as they discuss the difference between storytellers and authors, why writers need thick skin, and their desire to bring Book It back into the limelight. Someday, maybe you can even join them at their idea of a perfect getaway, Mom Camp. Inspiration starts now.
Hi, Christy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad to be here with you today to have this fun chat. It's great.
Thank you for joining me. I'm excited too. I know that we're on opposite ends of the country, but I love your books and I'm so excited to just talk bookish things with you for an hour.
Well, Rachel, I'm so excited to get to talk to you about your brand new book, Recipe for a Charmed Life, that just came out a week ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a week or two. It's brand new.
Brand new baby. It's so exciting. Well, I got a really early read of this book and I absolutely loved it and was so grateful to get to blurb it and get to tell everyone about how much I loved it. So can you tell us a little bit about this amazing book?
Oh, yes. And thank you for your blurb. I loved it because you actually wrote to me and you were like, I'm so mad at you because I had plans this weekend and I was just going to read it politely, give a great blurb. And then I really liked it. And then I ended up reading it and I didn't intend to do that this weekend. I was like, yes, okay, the best reason that Christy Woodson Harvey is mad at me is because she liked my book too much. Love that. So my newest book is called Recipe for a Charmed Life, and it is about an American chef in Paris who in one disastrous night loses her sous chef position, her cheating French boyfriend, and her sense of taste. When she wakes up the next morning, she can't taste anything except bitter. And her estranged mother writes to her from a little island in the Pacific Northwest and says, hey, there's a family secret you need to know. Can you come? And so Georgia goes to the island to reconnect with the mother she hasn't seen since she was 5 years old and to try to regain her spark in the kitchen. So it's got all the things I love. It's got food. It's got travel because it's Paris and this adorable island near where I am in the Pacific Northwest. It's got strong women facing big challenges. It's got family complexities. And then it's got second chances at love because there is a grouchy, taciturn oyster farmer from next door in chest-high rubber orange overalls.
I mean, you don't get better than that. Okay, so I have to ask you kind of a follow-up here. So I also really loved The Magic of Lemon Drop Pie. And you've heard me say that. I've talked about it a lot. And it has a little more of a time travel element to it, which I have to be honest, I feel like that was kind of an in thing when you wrote this book. And I really feel like this book does it the best of anything that I read during that time about time travel. I just loved it. I thought it was warm and, but you definitely have this very, this magical element that's running through your books. But I think what's interesting to me as a reader is that I don't necessarily, I'm just along for the ride. Does that make sense? I'm mm-hmm. not thinking oh, this is magic and it couldn't happen, because you also have you're balancing this sort of magic with also these very real characters who are having these very real struggles in this very warm and real way. So can you talk a little bit about this kind of string of magic that kind of runs through your books and how you balance that with the real lives of these characters?
Yeah, I would love to do that. So I got asked once on a podcast or in an interview, explain magical realism. And I was like, and I couldn't, I was sort of brought up short. And so after my inadequate answer on that podcast, I thought about it for a while and I realized that I love using magical realism because I love that sense of wonder and that sense of this is real life, but there are some things we can't quite explain. There's a sense of wonder and a sense of mystery, a sense of transcendence about it. And I realized that I use magical realism to highlight the emotional journey that the main character is on. So it's not just sort of sprinkling random bits of magic around. The magical realism is like the fairy dust on top of their emotional journey. And I think that's what resonates, because people are invested in these characters and their emotional journey. And then there's this kind of sense of wonder and transcendence that comes with it, with the magical realism, which that emphasizes and amplifies this growth journey that they're on toward finding sense of place, finding identity, finding home, finding connection, finding love again, that kind of stuff.
I love that. That's a good answer. I always wonder about, like, I love reading books like that, but I'm not sure that I'd be able to pull them off. You know, like, so do you, have you read a lot of magical realism? Like, is that one of your favorite genres? Like, how do you feel like, or were you just like, this is just who I am, what I write? Like, how did that transpire for you?
I think I read, I kind of stumbled into magical realism in high school with Alice Hoffman. And I she's amazing. I was so captivated by it. And then Sarah Addison Allen. And I was just captivated by kind of the sparkle. I like sparkle. I like kind of living in Technicolor. And I loved the sparkle of those books, that extra little something. So when I started writing books, I just put in some magical realism. I just put in stuff I like. So that's how I ended up with, you know, these settings that are always really evocative, interesting settings, because I put places that I like, and then lots of food, and then this magical realism element, because something just resonated. I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be amazing to live in a world where these sorts of things happen? And so I can't make it happen in real life, but hey, I can write a story about it.
That's a good point. I love the idea of like being able to kind of tweak the future in a way. And I think that's what you're really doing in these books. You're giving your characters sort of the ability to rewrite their fate in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Exactly. I want to talk about setting, because I got to read Summer of Songbirds, which was your last one. And yes. I absolutely adored it. It was like, it just transported me. And I never went to summer camp. And so it was like going back in time. I was like, oh, this is what I missed. So I want to talk. Can you tell us a little bit, for people who haven't read it? Excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat. For people that haven't read it, can you talk about Summer of Songbirds, and then talk about setting? Like, talk about the camp, because I adored the camp and I wanted to go.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, so first of all, thank you. And second of all, I'm glad to hear that you didn't go to camp, but you still enjoyed the book, because I definitely had some worries about that when I was writing this book. I thought, you know, if you didn't go to camp, are you just going to be like, yeah, 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 blah, blah, blah.
No, the exact opposite. It gave me, I was like, oh man, I want to be a songbird. I want to go to Camp Holly Springs.
I love that. I'm glad you want to be a songbird. Okay. Well, this was a pandemic book for me, weirdly, because it came out, July of 2023, but you know, you and I were talking about this off camera, how you're always kind of like our processes and where we are, which we'll have to talk about in a minute to like fill everybody else in. But sometimes you're working on something long before it's actually coming out. Mm-hmm. And so I had just finished my first historical fiction novel, The Wedding Veil, and it was so much fun to write, but of course it was very different because it was about Edith and Cornelia Vanderbilt and the Biltmore estate. And I was just doing tons and tons of like real down and dirty, like research, like just reading thousands of articles and doing interviews. And of course the world was shut down, so everything looked a little different than I had imagined. And I got finished with it and we were still kind of in this lockdown. And I just remember thinking like, I need a palate cleanser. Like, where do I want to go and where do I want to take my readers? And my instant thought was summer camp. I want to go back to summer camp and I want to take my readers to summer camp. And a couple weeks later, we found out that my son, you know, we had already registered him and paid and, you know, all the things. And that obviously they were not going to be going to camp that summer, which is good because, you know, 16 boys in a cabin not showering for 2 weeks is like never great, but it's definitely not great during a pandemic. So, we were offered the opportunity to go to summer camp. I mean, to go to family camp. And it gave me these like sort of two thoughts right away. One, I was like, what great luck, because I had just said I wanted to write a book about camp. And the other, I thought, oh my gosh, I hadn't thought about all these camps. What are they going to do? They can't have kids for the summer. they can't make money for the summer. Like, these camps are going to close down. They're going to have to. And so that gave me kind of the perfect sort of setup for this book, where these three best friends who met at summer camp come back together to save this place that changed all of their lives in so many different ways. And of course, you know, that's kind of the simple outline of the story, but there's a lot else to play in this book too. But just the idea that, you know, those friendships that you make when you're young really can sustain you into adulthood is something that I've always been really interested in. And the idea that childhood friendships, you know, tend to look a little different than our grown-up friendships do, you know, for better or worse. They just, there's a kind of purity to them that about these people that have known you your whole life. Like, you can't pretend to be someone that you're not with the people who have known you since you were 6 years old. But setting wise, it's interesting because I went to a camp in the mountains. It was called Camp Hollymont, and it was in Asheville. And so I grew up like at a mountain camp, and it was very similar. Like, a lot of the activities and things like that are in the book are based off of my own camp experiences. But I actually used this setting more of like a coastal setting. And it really is sort of based on Camp Seafarer, which is a girls' camp about an hour and a half from where we live. It's a sailing camp. It's on the river. And it's where we went to family camp. And it was just a very enchanting setting. And it's also just a place that holds a lot of like special memories and things like that for people here. It's a very like multi-generational camp where people come, you know, generation after generation. And I really wanted to kind of create that feel of like this multi-generational camp. So
anyway. I love that. Okay.
And you have a really, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm going to propose this. Mom camp. Mom sleepaway camp.
Right.
I think, wouldn't that be amazing? Like, now that we're the ages we are, where we could go and do all these things. I want to wear a neckerchief. I want to go canoeing. I want to make lanyards, like all the stuff. But as moms, I just think it would be amazing.
I love that.
I would sign up.
I love that. And people reached out to me and they were like, you need to put together like a camp weekend for readers, which like in theory sounds really fun, but I think the complexities of that might be
high. Complexities are high. We're authors. You know how to make up an amazing camp. You might not know how to actually run a real camp with real humans, but maybe not. You're very talented. Maybe you can.
Right. Right. No, I don't think I'd be good at that. I'm not very good at arts and crafts, Rachel. Like, my only like creative outlet is writing, which, you know, probably would not work really well for like our mom camp. I mean, it could, we could have like a journal writing day, but I'm not good at the other parts.
Christy, same. I grew up homeschooled in the Midwest, and like homeschoolers are the ultimate DIYers. So everyone I grew up with, they quilt and they knit their own sweaters and they make their own clothing. And like, no, what did I do? I just started writing books at 6 and I never stopped. And I can make jam, I can bake bread, but I am so bad at handicrafts. I have to farm them out for my own kids. I have to be like, hey kids, go to someone else's house to do the crafts. I miss that whole part.
I really feel very seen in this moment. I'm like, maybe my child is going to survive his childhood because I'm the same. I just am not good at any of that stuff. And it just doesn't even like appeal to me necessarily, but I do have to, okay. So I have to touch on two things that you just said.
Okay.
One, the canning and the baking and the, you know, making jam and all of those things. So I did not really grow up like doing those things, but my very first book, in 2015 was called Dear Carolina. And one of my characters, she has almost this like, it's not magical realism, like it's real, but you know how some people just have this very almost kind of like preternatural way of like dealing with the environment, and they can make things grow and they have this incredible green thumb, and they just like, they understand like the plants in a way that I do not. And so this character just kind of came to me. And so every one of her chapters opens up with, you know, something about farming or a growing season or canning or making jam or like what you're putting away when. And I had the most fun researching that book. And like, I was living in this little Eastern North Carolina town where women very much did all of these things. And so I got to go to like these women's houses and like learn how to like put up corn and, you know, make pickles and like all of these things that I really didn't know how to do. And anyway, I think that's just a really cool art form, and I love that you're so good at it.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yeah, we picked blackberries on the island where we lived and made jam, and It's just fun. It's, you know, it's how I grew up, and there's something that just feels so, I don't know. I grew up with my grandmother and my mother, and all life, I'm from a Northern Italian family, and life just happens around the kitchen. We grew a lot of our own food. Yeah. And so I grew up in the kitchen having these conversations about all the things about life, but our life centered around the kitchen. And I remember being tiny and like learning to putting this huge bread bucket between my legs and cranking the bread hook to make bread. And so when I started writing, I just naturally put food in, and I didn't do it on purpose. I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to make this a Rachel Linden feature, but I did. And then a couple books in, my editor was like, look, I'm so hungry reading your books. I have to keep a whole drawer full of snacks when you turn in a manuscript. You just need to make this a feature. Make it just lean into this food thing. And so I have put, and I was like, gladly, I love food. I love to cook. And I feel like so many of life's important conversations and lessons and moments and connections happen around food. And so I have just made that more and more of an aspect of my writing. So every book will have a lot of yummy food. And then we started putting recipes in the back, which I create in the kitchen. And that has been an extra layer of fun. So now I make everybody omelets because I learned how to make these French omelets for Recipe for a Charmed Life, and the recipes in the back, and they're delicious and they're so fun.
I love that. My new book, A Happier Life, that comes out in June, is my first book that has recipes in the back of it.
Oh my gosh. Tell me about that. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, so they are not my own recipes. They are actually recipes from my grandmother's, which it was kind of special. But I'm the same. It's funny. I'm not a great cook. I'm a pretty good baker.
Okay.
I'm not a great cook. My husband is a great cook. And maybe that's why I know I'm not a great cook, because like he's a great cook, you know? But I should be, because I, you know, my grandmothers were great cooks, and I'm the same as you. Like, my best memories of my whole life are like my whole like 24 person family, like sitting around tables at my grandparents' house, like eating and laughing. And, but yeah, so that was really kind of, my editor suggested it, and I was like, I don't know, but I had used some of my grandmother's recipes in this book, in the sections that take place in the 1970s. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll just put those in there. So it's kind of fun.
Because I've had a book come out, and my next book is due like in 3 days to my editor. So I've been living in a cave, but I saw the absolutely adorable cover and I was like, oh my gosh, Christy has another book. I've got to get my hands. And yeah, what you were saying about, you know, stories that just kind of sit with you. Yes, there are these stories that roll around like marbles in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I have a little folder on my computer that says story ideas. And I feel like, you know, some of them I'll put an idea in there and then I look at it and I think, oh no, I don't want to sit with that for a year and dwell with these people in this story. But then some of them I'll just be like, ooh, there is something there, something intrigues, something catches. And then I just kind of start rolling them around in my mind, sometimes for a year or two. And I'm just kind of polishing it like a little seashell or a little stone in there, going, okay, there's something there. What is this about? And often those are the stories I end up writing and loving. And so it sounds like you do that too. Do you have stories you're rolling around in your mind?
Completely. And that's so funny that you say that. And actually, so I'm going to say this, but it kind of leads into my next question for you, because I think it's so interesting to hear from other authors about like where they are in their kind of like writing, promotion, editing sort of like cycle of life. And it sounds like you're in a really interesting spot for that right now. I do that exact same thing. And I actually, so I had a series come out called the Peachtree Bluff series, and it came out in 2016, 17, 18, and then a Christmas book. And I loved writing that series. It was so fun. And so for a couple of years, I've been thinking, you know, I really want to write another series, and I'd really like to kind of delve back into that again. And I have an idea for one, and I love it, and I'm excited about it, and it's like pretty fully formed in my mind. And so A Happier Life was finished and turned in and edited and all of that. And I sat down and I was like, I'm going to start a new book, you know, on Tuesday or whatever. I'm sure we all give ourselves these like little arbitrary deadlines that are just for ourselves. It's like, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to start this book. I know what it is. I'm super excited about it. On Monday, I read a newspaper article and I was like, oh my gosh, like that's my next book. And it, you know, obviously wasn't the newspaper article, but it was this little spark of an idea that came from this newspaper article. And I'm sure that you do this with your, you know, with your crew also, but I texted my Friends in Fiction group chat, which is Patty Callahan, Henry, and Mary Kay Andrews, and Kristen Harmel. And I was like, y'all, I have this idea. Is this crazy? Do I write this or do I go with what I was going with? And they were like, no, you have to write that. You have to write that.
Oh, I love that.
And I love when that happens too, because it's like you have this list of these things that like have been, and you know, there's several things that I know of, like I know I'm going to write X book, but I just haven't quite found my way into the story yet.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's just interesting when that happens, when you do find your way into that story and then something else just like catches your eye. But I feel like I'm pretty careful about not letting the bright, shiny object steer me off course.
Uh-huh.
But then sometimes I think we're like given these stories and either we take them or they become someone else's. What do you think?
I think that's true. I think, you know, I think authors are, that's, I love that you said bright, shiny objects, the objects that you don't get distracted, because I think of authors kind of like seagulls. You know, I live on this little island. Yeah. We have lots of seagulls, and seagulls collect objects that are interesting to them. And so I feel like authors are like seagulls. We just sort of wander around in life collecting little shiny objects and objects of interest and hoarding them in our little story ideas and taking them out and deciding to make a story out of them. So I always tell people, like, be careful if you're sitting at dinner with an author, because that author is like listening. They're interacting with you, but they're also listening for a story. And something that you say may end up in a book. And I've been at lunch with authors sometimes, and somebody will tell this amazing personal anecdote, and the whole table looks at one another, and somebody would be like, am I taking that, or are you? Exactly, yes. Exactly. So we're like, you know, crows or seagulls, that we collect these shiny little objects because they're of interest to us, because human nature is of interest to us, the interactions of people we love. Stories. And I don't think of myself as a writer first. I think of myself as a storyteller first. And I've been a storyteller since I had words. My parents have an old cassette tape recording of me at 2 years old telling my first story. And it's just always been like that. I just am fascinated by story. And I think you and I don't even know where I'm going with this. I just like this stream of thought. I think you and I write similar stories. I remember the first story I read of yours. I think it was one of the Peachtree Bluff ones. I was like, oh, yum. It just felt like this delightful, delicious escapism, but with more meat to it and wonderful settings and great characters and interesting relational complexities. And I feel like you and I both write stories that are excellent airplane reading. People would be like, well, are you a beach read or are you romance? I'm like, no, you know, I write a book that is going to make you feel good at the end. And also I write a book that's great on an airplane. I feel like you and I both do that. So it's not.
That is a really great description. I really like that. A book that makes you feel good on an airplane.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember that. Yeah. I think that's a good one.
Exactly.
Okay. I keep hearing you talk about this like baby Rachel and her storytelling and her writing, and I'm interested to know, like, obviously this idea of storytelling and writing has always been a part of who you are, but how did you translate that from being the little girl that liked to scribble down stories? How did you get here to being grown-up Rachel writing these amazing books?
Well, I grew up without a television, and so books were my window to everything. They were my window to the world. I adored books. I won all of the prizes at the summer reading competitions at the library. I'd come in and be like, I read 27 books this week. And they would just sort of be like, here, take all the balls.
You're like, no, you didn't. Yeah. Right? And you're like, no, but I actually did. I was so the same. Okay, I have to interrupt you. Yeah. Did you have Book It at Pizza Hut?
Oh my gosh, Book It. Yes. Okay, we need to bring Book It back, because my son is he's 9 and he's an avid reader. And I was like, it would flip his mind if he was like, wait, I get free pizza for reading.
No, there's still Book It. There's totally still Book It. Your school just has to sign up. Yes, no. Yes. My son is, well, he's in sixth grade now.
Oh my
so
gosh.
He's like a little past the age of thinking that Book It is quite as fun.
Yes.
But yeah, when he was younger, absolutely. They were always like, you know, dueling it out for.
Oh, I wonder if you don't have it here.
Pizza, baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you? So you did Book It. Yes. Like, it felt like I was getting away with something. I was like, wait, I read books and then I get free pizza. There's no downside to this. I had so many those coupons.
I have the most vivid memories of, like, there was a pin, like a P-I-N, like a button that you had. It was like your Book It button. And mine looked like the solar system. It was big. Like, It was big. And you would put little stars on it for every book that you'd read. And so, of course, mine was like completely covered up with stars. And you would take it in and they would be like, oh, here's your personal pan pizza. I mean, yep. Those were the good days.
Those were the good days, man. Let's go back to book it. Let's have camp for. I think I'm feeling like adulting is hard right now. And mm-hmm. I'm wanting all the nostalgia. I'm like, let's just go back. Let's just go back and have camp for moms. Let's go back and do book it for adults. Like, maybe it could be with wine or champagne. Like, read this many books, get a cocktail. Maybe I'm just going to start
you're
my
really,
own.
Really hitting on something here, Rachel. I'm really into this idea. I'm really into this idea.
I'm liking these ideas. Okay, so you asked how I got from, you know, little Rachel yes. winning all of the prizes and writing. Mm-hmm. I wrote my first book when I was 6, and it was about beans. And I put an exclamation point at the end to make it more exciting, like beans, the vegetable. And I bound it in Cheerios boxes. And that was my first book. But I was always writing a story, and I was working.
Wait. Beans was the first book you wrote, or
yes,
the first book you
when
read?
When I was 6, the first book I wrote was called Beans, and my mom still has it. She put it in a Ziploc bag, and she was like, "When you are a famous author, this will be worth money." And I was like, "I don't think it works that way, but good luck." So
your
she
mom
still has it.
Totally manifested that for you. You should give her a big
hug. She's got that Ziploc somewhere safely tucked away. I was living overseas in Europe and working as an international aid worker. So we were working with a faith-based organization that was helping refugees and women who had been exploited and minority groups and education, all kinds of stuff. And I had always been writing a book on the side. I just always, from 6 on, I was always writing something. And about 7 years in, 5 or 7 years into our time in Europe, I thought, you know, I've always wanted to do this. We don't have kids yet. We haven't started our family yet. What if I just gave it a go? What if I just saw if I could? So I, my general rule of thumb is get rejected by the best first. So I made a list of agents.
That's brilliant. I'm using that.
Yeah. I knew that I was ready. I'm pretty resilient and pretty like realistic about rejection, and I knew that this is just a big part of the author life is rejection. You got to be tough and you got to be persistent. So I was like, okay, well, I might as well get rejected by the best agents first and work my way down. So I started contacting, I did research, and I contacted the best literary agents that were repping women's fiction at that time, and started working my way down, and the number 2 agent said yes. And that's how it started. And I did not know what I was doing. I was not ready. Success came too early for me because I had a contract with a publisher, a 2-book contract with HarperCollins, an imprint of HarperCollins. And they're like, okay, what is your brand? What is your marketing? And I was like, I write stories. Like I had no clue what I was doing. So I had to learn it all on the back end, which I like learned it in reverse. It was a very, very steep learning curve for a couple of years. Okay, so Christy, I know that you were doing something really different before you started this blockbuster, amazing, best-selling career. What were you doing and how did you get into books? Like, tell me, how did you go from there to here?
First of all, that's really fun. Can we just like, can I put that just like on my next book, like blockbuster? Yes. Yeah, thank yes. you. It'd be great. I appreciate that. So I love to write and I had sort of always been a writer. And decided to go to journalism school and just thought, you know, I want to tell real people's stories. And I really thought that's where my strengths were. I didn't actually have a lot of interest in creative writing. So I went to journalism school at UNC Chapel Hill. I just absolutely loved it. Felt even more in love with journalism than I already was. And then graduated. And you know, when you're like 21 and you think, I'm going to go do something different. And so I got a master's in English instead of getting a master's in journalism because I thought, okay, I've spent 4 years writing. I'm going to go spend 2 years reading. That was like the greatest thing that I could possibly think of.
Oh, and then I
graduated and took a job in finance.
Because that's the obvious thing to do after doing journalism and 2 years of reading. Obviously, you should go into finance.
And I'm also like, who would have hired me for that? Like, who? And it was like somebody that reached out to me and was like, I think you'd be good at this. And I was like, okay, yeah. I don't know. They're random. But I think the weird thing was, is that in a lot of ways, like it was a sales job, you know? And so basically, I mean, I got my Series 7 in 66, and I was, you know, I learned so much in that job, but it was basically a sales job. And I got to travel, which was kind of fun. And I realized that I started having all these ideas. And I knew from my creative writing classes in college that they were longer than a short story. And there was this one idea that just wouldn't let me go. And so I'd be like driving around and going to client meetings, and I would be thinking about this story. And so finally, one day, I was like, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to try to write this because, okay, so question for you, like, did you know you could write a book before you wrote a book?
Oh, Christy, I've always been writing a book. I wrote my first
Okay.
book when I was six, but it was like, 10 pages long. But I
Okay.
had a lot of false starts in high school. But I actually wrote my first book, my first full-length novel, I finished when I was 17.
Okay. Okay.
So,
So
yes, I always
I
just
had
wrote
none of that.
books.
This was my first like notion that like I was going to write a book. So I came at it from a like, I'm going to see if I could write a book, but I don't know if I can write a book. So let's just see how it goes. But it wasn't even like, I'm going to try to be an author. I'm going to try to get published. It was just like, I'm going to write a book. And so I wrote actually a couple of manuscripts before I even found one that I was like really happy with. And finally, it was my husband that was like, okay, are you just going to keep writing these and putting them in your closet, or are you going to try to get published? And I was like, I don't know. It's scary and it's hard, and you know, it's just, I don't know, I'm gonna put it out there and people aren't gonna like it. And he was like, honey, no offense, but you sell life insurance, you can handle someone telling you no.
Oh,
I
I love your
was
husband.
like, and all jokes aside, like doing that job, that was probably the biggest thing I gained from it, besides obviously like a ton of financial knowledge, was the fact that like rejection was nothing. Like you were in a sales job. You didn't care if people told you no. 10-3-1. I mean, you had to have 10 people before one told you yes. And so it prepared me really well for, you know, querying to literary agents. And I don't think I went into it like, this agent told me no. I went into it like, I'm gonna send, and it was hilarious because it really was like my same formula. I sent out 10 query letters. I got three requests for the manuscript, and one agent asked to represent me,
Oh,
which is
that's ironic. But
bizarre. And
what an amazing skill, because like you can't make it in this business if you don't have a tough skin, a thick skin to criticism and rejection, because it's through every part of it. And so that's amazing that your finance job like so well
it really,
strangely
and
prepared
it's
you.
like only in retrospect that I kind of see that now. But so what about you? Like what was your journey to finally getting that first deal? I mean, obviously, this was what you were always going to
This well,
do.
actually, no, because I wanted to do several things. So I would consider, people will ask me like, okay, did you always want to be an author? And I was like, actually, I was always a storyteller, which to me, authoring is part of that. But I told stories. I was actually involved in theater for years and years and years because I'm a pretty extroverted introvert, and I loved being on the stage. And I thought that's what I was going to do. And it wasn't until probably my senior year of high school, I'd written a manuscript and I really liked it. I liked writing, but I loved the theater as well. And I
I love how you
wondered,
say it wasn't until my senior year of high school.
oh,
Like, God, I
I
was 17 before I
was
completed my
17
first book.
before
What a waste of a
completed.
life.
Well, I was homeschooled, and homeschoolers just do things sort of backwards and weirdly. Like I was just sort of like, we didn't have a television. And so I just sort of, grew up like making up stories, and that's what I did for entertainment, reading and writing. Those were my window to the world. And so at 17, I kind of got a glimpse of what it would be like to try to have a life and a family with a theater job. And I thought, I don't think this is for me. And I do think that in a way, authoring is like the introvert's theater. It's like the portable theater job. So I realized, oh my gosh, I can be doing anything, be anywhere in the world, and be writing stories, where that's not the case with being on the stage. And so I took a year off between high school and college to try to publish my first book and learned a huge amount. And that was like pre-internet, all the tips and tricks and all the info you have now. It was like go to the library and like clear out the section on how to publish a book. So I learned everything in life from books. And so that's how I learned how to find an agent and how to write a query letter. It was all from books. But I also ended up going to graduate school for an intercultural studies major because I wanted to live overseas and work in not-for-profit work. And so I ended up spending 7 years working for a faith-based not-for-profit overseas, and that working with women in trauma and refugees and all kinds of stuff, which was amazing. And I kept trying to figure out, like, how do those two fit together? And it took me a while to think, to realize, like, oh, this actually fits really well. I can be doing something that feels meaningful and writing stories that feel meaningful. And it all goes toward the same goal of trying to contribute positively to the world. So I had lived for 7 years in Europe before I decided, you know, I just keep writing books. Like, I'm always writing books. And why don't I try to do this? Basically, my husband was like, maybe this is the time. We don't have kids yet. Why don't you try to do this if you want to do it? And I thought, okay, why not? And then as timing worked out, it ended up that, like, my first book was published and we moved back to the US. We moved back to the US a month before my first book was published, and I had a 6-month-old and a 2.5-year-old. That is, like, the worst time ever to try to start a new career. But here we are.
But maybe there's something to that, because I was the same. So my son was a brand newborn baby when I wrote my first book that got published, and then he was 2. And, like, I went on a month-long book tour for my first.
Oh my gosh.
And he came. So my parents, my first, like, 4 books, I was able to, like, take him out of school to be on book tour, because it was like pre-K.
Right. Doesn't matter.
My parents would pack up and come so that we could, like, all go on book tour, which is, like, insane.
Oh, bless their hearts. Yeah. The stuff that we did, I mean, the stuff you do to do the career you love, right? Yeah. Like
I think I'm getting, like, less tough in my age. Like,
are we getting soft?
Right. Like, what were we thinking? But it seemed totally fine. Like, it was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were living our dreams, right?
Exactly. We took my son everywhere. By the time he was 2, he'd been to 24 countries. We would pull out his little passport, and they would just be like, in customs, they'd be like, what do you do? Like, what are you doing to this child? And so, yeah, he grew up on an airplane. But, yeah, that's just kind of
portable.
Yeah, it's portable. And you are flexible for the things that you love. You make it work. Right?
That's right. Okay. So, speaking of things that you love, tell us about what's coming next for you.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. I just turned it into my editor. So it is a story that I love. It is set in Italy. It's 3 generations of women on an olive farm, and there's a magical cookbook, and there's a recipe, a lost recipe that shows you the happiest moment of your life. And of course, there's a handsome Italian first love, et cetera, et cetera. There's a really rambunctious goat. And then there's Italy and so much good food. So there's food, magic, travel, second chances at love, this great setting, and spunky grandma and angsty half-sister. And it's just, I just love this story. And it's called The Secret of Orange Blossom Cake. And it will come out next March.
Sounds delicious. Sounds like one of those ones that needs the disclaimer, like, please eat with a snack and hate.
Yeah. Yes, it is. This one as well. It's yeah. Oh, Italian food, man. It's so good. so that is what is happening. And then I'm starting on my next one, which I can't say anything about yet, but is super fun and kind of different. But what about you? Because you have one that's coming out soon.
Yeah, I do. So I have A Happier Life coming June 25th, which I'm, like, just tiptoeing into the, you know how you're like, I'm fine, everything's fine, and then you hit that critical mass where you're like, we're not ready. Do you do that?
My life, like, is on fire. Yes, yeah. Totally. And I'm like, oh yeah, we're under control, and now then everything is a dumpster fire.
And it's like, there's time. It's not like it's tomorrow. But anyway, I feel like this week I'm all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, like, it's coming fast and furious. But A Happier Life is actually a story that has been with me for a long time, because it's based on something that, or not based on, it's inspired by something that happened in my own family.
So
it is a book about a young woman named Keaton, who always knew that her grandparents died in kind of a tragic accident before she was born. But what she doesn't know is that her mother and her uncle have never sold their childhood home in the seaside town of Beaufort, North Carolina. And so they decide they're finally ready to part with the house, but neither of them can quite be the person to actually go to Beaufort and put the house on the market and clean it out. They just don't think they can handle it, you know, given that they had kind of a tragic, like, last moment in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, for a number of reasons that you find out in the book, decides that she's going to be the one to go to Beaufort to put the house on the market. And she gets there and she basically walks into this house that has been completely empty for almost 50, or not completely empty. Everything's still there. It's been completely untouched for almost 50 years. So she's into this time capsule of a house. And as she's kind of wading through her grandparents' lives and getting to meet all these townspeople and hearing all these stories about her grandparents, she starts to realize that maybe the stories that she's been told about them aren't true. And in the other point of view, we get to hear from her grandmother, Rebecca St. James, from 1935 until 1976. So there's a lot of real life Beaufort and Carteret County and the Crystal Coast in that time period, which was really fun to get to write about. But we get to see Rebecca St. James's life and her role as Beaufort's finest hostess. Everyone wants to be invited to her parties, but we get to watch her life unfold and see what actually happened to Rebecca and Townsend St. James on that fateful night in 1976. So I'm very excited about it. But I say that I had a great aunt and uncle who passed away before I was born, but I always knew this story about their death. And then two things happened 2 days in a row that made me have this moment of like, is that really what happened? And it gave me the idea of the story. But also our neighbors, when I was growing up, there was a house, like we moved into a house and then our old neighbors bought the house across the street, but the house across the street had literally no one had been in it in 50 years. And I was one of the first people to go in that house. And you like went in the house, and this was an even more bizarre situation than the one I write about, because honestly, it's not believable in fiction because it was so bizarre, but they had had a fight at Thanksgiving and everyone got up and left and no one ever walked back in the house. The turkey was still on the table. And like, you would think it would be like disintegrated. It was actually petrified. Like, it was like, you know, like you could like knock on the turkey. It was like, but there were like kids' toys like out in their rooms and like newspapers on the couch and like dishes in the sink. Like it was
no way.
It was unbelievable. So those two things kind of formed together to create this book. Sorry, I talked about that a lot. I think
it's so fun. It's on your mind because it's coming up. Okay, so when does it release? Because it's coming up.
June 25th.
June 25th. Oh my gosh, what a fun summer read. I can't wait to get my hands on it. That sounds perfect. So they can read yours and then they can wait a few months and then they can read about Italy and olive farms.
Yep.
And it's going to be a good year of reading. That's wonderful. It's going to be a
good year of reading. Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's so always such a pleasure to chat with you, Christy.
Thank you for having me. Oh my gosh, it was such a treat to get to chat with you. And I feel like we could have talked for hours. So I'm glad I think we got it all covered. And I just loved it. So thanks for having me.
I did too. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you for listening. Please visit alwaysauthors.com to learn about our other episodes. Always Authors is an exclusive production of Atomic Focus Entertainment.